Today's edition of the Derek Hunter Podcast is brought to you by Life Change Tea.
Why go to getthetea.com? Because this important news could change your life. Socrates made a statement saying that all disease starts in the gut. Take care of your gut, and well, the rest speaks for itself. Life Change Tea is a wonderful way to aid in your digestion. Brew it, steep it, drink it, and feel it go to work. We at Life Change Tea have been around for years helping people just like you feel better. Lots of testimonials and lots of happy people. Log on to getthetea.com. That's getthetea.com. Getthetea.com.
Alrighty, hello again everyone and welcome to it. It is the Derek Hunter Podcast for the 15th of October 2021. And I am Derek Hunter. That's not helping. I am your host. Welcome to it. Don't worry, she won't be around for the recording of the actual discussion of the news of the day. But Quinn asked if she could also do the radio show, so I said sure. She doesn't understand the difference. So say hello, Quinn.
Hello.
How are you feeling today?
I'm a little bit better.
Feel a little bit better? You sound a lot better. You still have a lot of energy, but you still have a lot of snot in your nose.
I know, because my sneeze is going away.
Yes, let's hope it goes away soon.
But maybe it needs to take a while when I feel better a lot, big.
That's right. Hey, have a great weekend, everybody.
Great weekend, everybody.
And subscribe to the Curse Show.
Describe his port show.
Yeah. Wow, there's a ringing endorsement. Anyway, we have the Curse Show, the Week in Heaven review at patreon.com/Derek Hunter Podcast. It's where you get it. It's the only place to get it. And it's just the news, discussion of the news, the way the news should deserves to be discussed. Guy called into my actual radio show today saying that he heard that he loves the Curse Show. He loves the Patreon show. So I appreciate that. Then he swore on the air and like, you're a truck driver, aren't you? We had to let, it wasn't my call. The producer dropped him. But I knew what he was saying and I agreed with what he was saying. But I also understand the massive FCC fines that could await somebody who curses. So appreciate the support. Patreon.com/Derek Hunter Podcast. And the other voice you just heard in the background is Bailey, who will also not be in the room. Bailey, come here and say hello to everybody.
Yeah.
Before you go to bed.
Belly Bill.
Yes, you're Belly. Yeah, that's, again, compelling speech. I'm sure at some point I was like this. Now they're bouncing off the cat tree. Anyway, we've got a lot of things to get to today. There's so much going on in the news. Supply chain issues galore, ladies and or gentlemen. So let's get to it. There is, of course, a lot going on, as there is always a lot going on, and a lot of what's going on is going to cost you more. There are supply chain issues and inflationary issues up and down our economy, but this administration doesn't want to admit it. It's the most amazing thing. Denial ain't just a river in Egypt. It's been a joke for a long time now, but it also is a political tactic. It is the Democrats' political tactic. It's amazing how these people can look at what is and absolutely insist that it isn't. I don't get people like that. I really don't get. I get that, you know, denialism or whatever for certain things like, oh, my shoulder hurts, but I'm just going to forget it. I'm going to power through what have you. But this is a little bit more than something that'll work itself out. This is something that will damage the country and harm people from coast to coast. And what do Democrats tell us nonstop about themselves? I care. We care. We are the party of the middle class. We are the party of the poor. Who do you think gets hammered the hardest by inflationary policies? Who do you think it is? It ain't the rich. People sitting on a pile of money that they'll never burn through in their entire lives don't really care that things are getting more expensive. You know, they don't notice it. Just like you're not hitting the rich with a gasoline tax increase or a cigarette tax increase or whatever alcohol tax increase. Oh, yeah, they'll have to pay more. But they'll have to pay ultimately more that equals a rounding error. If your income is $20 million a year and they raise the cigarette taxes by a dollar a pack and you smoke, you're not going to notice the difference. You're not going to go, well, there you go. I was going to get more caviar, but now I can't afford it because of the cost of cigarettes. No. But if you're making $30,000 a year and you smoke a pack a day, which is pretty common, not hard to do, you'd be looking at a $365 tax hike on you. Who do you think that $365 matters more to? The truck driver or the guy who owns the trucking company? It's a regressive tax. That is what Democrats are trying to do. They say, well, Joe Biden runs around and says, I will never raise taxes on anybody making $400,000 or less. And you think, oh, Joe, Mr. Honest Lunch Bucket Joe, he would never lie. Never. I mean, aside from the fact that his whole career and seemingly life is built on lies. He would never lie. Never. So it's wonderful. We're safe. Our money is taken care of. But then you look at what he's trying to do, and it will disproportionately impact lower income people. Just won't be their income tax rates. That's what Joe means when he talks about, I won't raise taxes on the poor. I will only want $400,000 or more. The only people I'm going to raise taxes on. Income taxes. Everything else will be made more expensive. That will disproportionately harm the poor. I told you before, and I mean it. It's true. There isn't enough money in the filthy rich to run the government. Yes, there are some individuals with a ton of money, a ton of net worth, but there aren't very many of them. So you can burn through them pretty quickly, especially the rate at which our government burns through money. They have to keep moving down the food chain there, the income ladder. They may not want to and will not raise the income tax rates, although you never know, but they'll raise every other tax. They'll call it a fee. They'll call it a fine. They'll call it a corporate tax. Oh, we're going to raise corporate taxes. Well, those taxes are immediately passed on to you in the form of higher prices. Period. End of story. Everybody knows this. My daughters know this, and they're 3 and 4 years old. Democrats somehow don't know this. So you've got this situation where prices are going up because of bad policies. And then you have this situation where prices are going up because of bad other policies. It's monetary policies that are driving prices up because of inflation. You print more money. The money that exists is worth less necessarily. That's how markets work. And we're just printing up trillion-dollar bills at a time. We also have a problem with the supply chain. If you go to a grocery store, I told you earlier, on Sunday, I went to Costco. I had to get milk and stuff for the week. And while there, I noticed that we were, you know, we could use more toilet paper, but we weren't out of toilet. We had half a giant chub pack or whatever. But I like to plan ahead. My mother was a woman who, God rest her soul, she taught us children well about buying on sale and stocking up when you can and making sure you never actually run out of anything. We still have, my dad still has a freezer full of soups my mom made and cabinets full of fewer canned goods. Because when we were up there, my wife went through and took out everything that was expired. We probably still could have eaten it, but we took out everything that was expired. And then I went to the store and replaced it. So there was still the same stuff as just, you know, from this decade. But she made sure that we knew to stock up. One thing I don't do that she taught me was clip coupons. But, boy, she was good at clipping coupons, too. But to make sure you don't run out of anything. So when I was at Costco, I'm looking at the, I'm walking around, and I got the milk, and it was in the back. And right next to it is the piles, the wall, the great wall of toilet paper. Except it wasn't a great wall again. I remember when the great wall of toilet paper disappeared. You know, it was like the fall of the Berlin Wall. One day it was there. The next day it wasn't there. And you're like, what's going on? How did this happen? And thankfully, we were fully stocked on toilet paper and never really ran out. But I noticed that the great wall of toilet paper was just kind of an okay wall of toilet paper. And right above the okay wall of toilet paper was a sign that says limit one per customer. And I thought, what's going on here? And I recognized that everybody was buying toilet paper. Even people who probably didn't go there for toilet paper but saw that sign, that was me. I said, well, I'm here. We're going to need toilet paper. I'll buy my one pack. And I bought that, and I bought a pack of paper towel just because that also had a sign above it, which to me was telegraphing the punch that they know down their supply chain lines, things are starting to slow down. They're having difficulty keeping stores stocked. Even, you know, it may just be they're having difficulty keeping stores stocked at the typical Great Wall of Toilet Paper level, and they've only got about half that, so they don't want to have any problems, so they put signs out. Now, I don't think they realize that the signs being out probably are perpetuating the problem, but that's beside the point. The point is the sign. And the sign had me go, I'm going to go buy toilet paper. And I think it had that effect on a lot of other people. Now, the reason we're having difficulty finding toilet paper, the reason you're having difficulty finding, I was in a grocery store yesterday or the day before, I can't remember which, but the lunch meat, the prepackaged lunch meat, you know, Oscar Mayer, bologna and things like that, kid, I don't understand. The worst food is, the more kids love it. Kids love bologna. Good Lord, they love bologna. But they got the bologna there and the ham and the everything. And that, it wasn't empty and didn't seem to be missing anything. But it used to be full. Now it's not full. Now it's like half full. And you think, well, maybe it was just a busy day. Maybe there's a whole bunch of people who are like, you know what? It's a bologna day. Let's go have bologna. Let's have bologna fights or something. No, it is more than likely, because I don't remember now that I'm thinking about it, once that made me think about it, I don't remember the last time I saw that fridge thing, the open refrigerator thing, full. I don't remember. That's always had something in it. Some days it doesn't have the all beef bologna. Some days it doesn't have the God knows what bologna. But it always had some bologna in one form or another. Maybe it was an off-brand. There was something there. And it seems like we just might be on the verge of supply chain issues. Not to the point that people are going to be starving. It's not what I'm implying. It's not what I'm saying. But when there is scarcity, there is an increase in cost, right? If you used to move 1,000 units of something, I'll just use basic examples of it. You used to move 1,000 units of something. You'd put 1,000 TVs in your truck, and you could charge $1,000 per TV. And you'd make a profit because the cost of moving the truck is covered by the selling of the 1,000 units at $1,000, and there's a healthy profit for the company. Well, now if you can only get 500 TVs in that truck, granted it's a big truck or small TVs, but if you could only get 500, well, your revenue is cut in half. It doesn't cost less, really, not any appreciable amount less, to operate the truck, and in fact, prices for gasoline have gone up significantly, too, a dollar in the past year, thanks to Joe Biden and ending all of the drilling and all the things, the pipeline, everything he did to increase the price of gasoline to placate his radical left environmentalist wacko bases. So now your revenue is cut and your costs are increased. How do you operate at that rate? You really can't. You can't for very long. That's the supply chain issues that we're seeing. The 500 TVs instead of the 1,000 coming in are because of lots of reasons. There's, you know, dozens of ships parked off the West Coast that can't get unloaded at the ports. You've got parts and ingredients in things that can't get around the world right now for whatever reason. People don't want to work. People are afraid to work. People have been scared to death about the concept of leaving their house. So you know what? They're not leaving their house. That scarcity of things. If you need widgets and you need 1,000 widgets a day and you're only getting 500 widgets a day because the widget maker is having to cut hours of the factory because the people who make widgets are going, I'm scared. I just watched CNN and they told me everybody's going to die who leaves their house. I'm not leaving their house. I'm not going out. And by the way, my state is making it easier on me by relaxing the unemployment requirements and by throwing me a little extra money and so on and so forth. And you begin to see what the problem is. This is a government-caused problem. A government-caused problem, by and large. 98-99% of this. Well, Joe Biden, somebody finally went in and woke him up. Not to explain to him what was going on. He wouldn't understand it, no matter what terms you put it in. But to tell him he had to come out and address something. Finally, it was beyond the point where he could continue to ignore it. And then, like I say, when every other option is exhausted, Democrats will finally, and only then, do what they must. That's it. It's how they are. It's how they roll. So he came out and he gave a speech yesterday about what he's doing on the supply chain. Now, they'll try and bill this as it was a press availability or it was a press conference. It wasn't. He didn't take a single question. As soon as it was over, he turned tail and ran. He never walks so fast as when he's walking away from the press. You watch him skip and just run, basically, out of a room when there are people shouting questions at him. When he's meandering from Marine One into the White House and he's far enough away that he can pretend he doesn't hear it and he's still got the mask on for some reason when he's alone outside, he just, you know, takes his little shuffle time. No rush. But when there are questions being shouted at him, he turns tail and runs fast. Well, not a full-blown sprint. The guy would break a hip. He's almost 80. But he is not interested in hearing any questions. But he did come out and give a speech about how he is going to, and he's on this, and he's been on this for a while. Fear not. And this is perhaps my, I'm going to play these two clips because this is maybe my favorite part. Joe Biden said that he's been on this. He's been on this since February, right? He said, well, the supply chain, because there have been a lot of questions about, hey, dude, what are you doing? What's happening with the supply chain? Why aren't you addressing the supply chain? And the deal was, or the lie from the White House is, we've been on this behind the scenes forever, which is, you know, weird. If you're addressing a problem, why would you keep it secret? They run around and try to claim credit for everything good in the country that they had nothing to do with. But something that they're addressing that is clearly an issue, they go, well, we didn't want to brag. We didn't want to talk about it. We were just trying to keep it, playing it pretty close to the vest. Yesterday, Joe Biden said that he has been working on this. He signed an executive. First of all, he says he signed a piece of legislation. Then he corrects himself and says it was an executive order, which, again, does this guy not know what in the hell he's doing as president of the United States? You got to wonder that. It's a legitimate question, a serious question, a dangerous question for which there are no good answers. But Joe Biden said yesterday that he's been working on this supply chain stuff since February. February is important. Just remember that February part. Listen to him make the claim.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. I know you're hearing a lot about something called supply chains and how hard it is to get a range of things from a toaster to sneakers to bicycles to bedroom furniture. And that's why back in February, I signed a piece of legislation on supply chain, an executive order on supply chains, and what we had to move on it.
Okay, so he's been Johnny on the spot since February, right? He's been aware, because they're trying to say, no, this isn't a surprise. We've known about this. We've got this. Don't worry about this. We've been on this thing since February. We knew about this years ago. Since the 70s, we've been secretly convening the Biden supply chain panel. Well, later, and by later, I mean a couple of minutes later is all, Joe Biden then goes on to talk about the supply chain task force he set up. That he set up in June. It's not me saying he set it up in June. It's him saying he set it up in June. Well, if February, March, April, May, June. It's 5 months. 5 months. What took five? If this is so important, he's Johnny on the spot. And way out in front of this, ahead of the curve for once in his life, why did it take him 5 months from signing his executive order, talking about supply chain, to actually doing anything about it? Doesn't sound to me like it's an issue you take very seriously. But again, don't take my word for it. Here's sniffy, gropey, creepy Uncle Joe.
I want to thank my supply chain disruption task force, which we set up in June.
Yeah, we set it up in June. You've been on it since February. You got around to doing something about it in June. and we're having massive issues now, and it's October. Anybody seeing a disconnect there except for me? Okay, what have you been doing? Setting up a task force to do nothing isn't particularly helpful. Call me old-fashioned, call me crazy, but we got a task force for that. What are they doing? They're literally doing nothing. Literally, they're doing nothing. But don't sweat it. We've got this thing. Oh, all right. Well, I guess. You feeling better yet? Feeling like they've got a handle on this problem? Hell no. Yeah, as Democrats pat themselves on the back, we're addressing the supply chain issue. Eventually, we'll get a handle on this inflation thing. They have no plan to get a handle on inflation. In fact, they're doubling, tripling down on everything that causes inflation. ABC News, headline, winter heating bills set to jump as inflation hits home. So as people are out there, Democrats are saying, look, we're giving senior citizens the biggest cost of living increase they've had in, I forget what it was, like 17 or 30 years, something. It was a long time. They're very proud. We got the biggest cost of living increase. The cost of living increases to Social Security are pegged directly to inflation. This is nothing to brag about. This is nothing to be excited about. This is a passive, backhanded admission that, yeah, we're getting screwed on inflation. Inflation is really out of control. We have to increase Social Security payments rather significantly, more than we have in a couple of decades, because we haven't had inflation for a couple of decades. Now we've got inflation. Yay, you get more money. Oh, sorry, it's going to cost you more money to heat your home. Well, which do you think is going to be greater? The increase in the Social Security checks or the increase in your heating bills? ABC News. Get ready to pay sharply higher bills for heating this winter, along with seemingly everything else. Oh, so wait a second. It's not just heating your house, it's everything else? With prices surging worldwide for heating oil, natural gas, and other fuels, the U.S. government said Wednesday it expects households to see their heating bills jump by as much as 54% compared to last winter. Now, put that 54% bump in your heating bill. You can even say, well, it might up to 54%. It might only be 30%. Oh, okay. Let's put 30%. On your heating on the scale on one side, and then the other side is like it's what was it, a $60 or $90 a month increase in your Social Security payments because of inflation. Which do you think is going to be greater? Which do you think is, because it's not just the cost of heating your home on that one side of the scale, it's the cost of meat, it's the cost of vegetables, it's the cost of food that you kind of need to eat. To live, you know? It's kind of an important thing. So the scale then begins to tip significantly because you got one thing here that got an increase. Your Social Security got that increase. Ooh, boy, howdy, don't you feel proud? And thank Joe Biden for that massive increase. You can't thank Joe Biden for that massive increase because that massive increase is due to inflation. And this inflation is due to Joe Biden. So, yes, you should directly thank Joe Biden for that. Nearly half the homes in the U.S. use natural gas for heat, and they could pay an average $749 this winter, 30% more than a year ago. Those in the Midwest could get particularly pinched, with bills up an estimated 49%, and this could be the most expensive winter for natural gas-heated homes since 2008-2009. The second most used heating source for homes is electricity, making up 41% of the country. And those households could see a more modest 6% increase to $1,268. So dollars per year. Okay, so depends on how screwed you're going to get. Depends on how you heat your home. Home heating oil, which makes up 4% of the country, could see a 43% increase. And LIHEAP is a program, low-income heating oil program or something like that. LIHEAP has been around forever. The government subsidizes this, and the government is now going to have to subsidize it more. And what do you think that's going to do? is going to lead to more borrowing, printing of money, which will lead to more inflation. It begins to see a death spiral. At some point, the government, and this is going to be wildly unpopular, and nobody's going to have the intestinal fortitude in politics to do this or say this, but this is what's going to have to happen. There's going to have to be a big dose of medicine taken, right? It just is. You're going to have to stop this. Otherwise, the spiral gets out of control. Now, I don't know. I don't think there's a Republican who will run on, we've got to, you know, scale back. I don't think there's, I know there's a Democrat who, no Democrat who would run on this. Like, I'll give you an example. Right now, Quinn has a cold. Quinn is stuffed up. The other day, it was Bailey. Now it's Quinn. They're not a whole lot of cold medicine for toddlers. It does not. So I've been giving her the Tylenol fever and stuff, you know, like, because the Tylenol cold stuff is for people who are 6 years old. And so, like, well, she doesn't feel bad. She's running around. She's not changed in any way, shape, or form, except that her nose is full of snot. So I gave her this stuff, and my wife has this, I don't know, Zubies or Bees or so, I don't know what the company is, but there is apparently toddler cold medicine that's supposed to help with congestion. It tastes like garbage. It tastes like garbage. When I came in with the medicine, because she was also running a fever, even though, again, you would never know it from looking at her. I came in with the Tylenol, and she goes, oh, I like the pink stuff. It tastes good. Okay, great. It's not really helping with the snot, which is the problem. The vapor rub kind of helps. And the house smells like a vaporizer right now. But the direct impact from the medicine is not related to that. It's to help keep the fever down so it doesn't spike and help with any aches and pains that she's just pretending she doesn't have, whatever the case is. My wife came in a couple times. Well, not came in. It's not like we got her confined in a room. Gave her this Bees stuff. And it tastes like garbage. She starts crying. She doesn't want it. It's horrible. It's yucky. It's blah, 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 blah. That medicine is actually probably, well, it actually is much better for her towards what she's got. She's got stuffed up. She's got congestion in the head. It is much better for that. But it tastes like garbage and she doesn't want to take it. You make her take it, but that's the job of being a parent. Still, when it comes to inflation, the solutions, the only way out of it, are that Bees medicine, are that bad-tasting medicine. You've got to cut things. You've got to stop spending money. You've got to remove currency from the economy. You've got to wait for things to catch up. You've got to sit there, and they lived high on the hog. You know, you ran up the credit cards, and boy, howdy, did you have an awesome week in Vegas. You got cash advances on your Amex and your Visa and your Discover card. And you got the high roller suite. It was awesome, man. It was just nonstop. But, you know, you don't want to talk about it because what happens there stays there. Now comes the time when the bills come. Now comes the time when you get the knock on your credit. Now comes the time when you go, I got to pay these bills, but I've got to pay my pre-existing bills already, too. It wasn't just that I took out 20 grand on my Amex card at 20% or whatever the hell they charge for that. It's that I had a mortgage already that I was paying. It's that I had electric bills that I was paying. It's I had this, that, and the other thing I was already paying. What am I supposed to do? You have to prioritize. You're going to have to make cuts. Maybe you lived high on the hog and every Thursday was Tomahawk Steak Thursday. Well, maybe it's going to be Hamburger Helper Thursday for a while, for a long while. No one wants that. No one likes that. Everyone grouses about that. But that's something you have to do when you're dealing with situations like this, problems like this. So problems created by our government. They have to be solved by adults and or created by children in our government. They have to be solved by adults in our government. But sadly, I don't think we have any adults in our government. Certainly not in this administration. Definitely not in this administration. On the issue of supply chains, though, Joe Biden talking about, this is, again, he's been on this issue since February or so, he says. He has had a task force, supply chain task force, since June. And yesterday's really the first time he's talked about it. And he didn't really say much at all. He ultimately went out there and said, we're going to do X, Y, and Z, but we really need the private sector, who we've demonized and put the boot on their neck. We need them to step up. They're going to have to step up. Listen, this cut here is Joe Biden's big solution, at least so far. When this doesn't work, I'm sure that something else will come up. Something else will work. By the way, the chief of staff to the president of the United States, a guy called Ron Klain. He was Al Gore's chief of staff when he was vice president. He was also the head of Barack Obama's Ebola task force. So he knows about task force and being worthless. Ron Klain retweeted a guy called Jason Furman. Jason Furman is a professor of practice at Harvard, teaches economics, right? He's also a senior fellow at something called Peterson Institute. I never heard of it. The Peterson Institute for International Economics. They're a lot nonpartisan, blah, blah, blah. They're left wing. Jason Furman tweeted out yesterday, quote, most of the economic problems we're facing, inflation, supply chains, etc., are high-class problems. We wouldn't have had them if the unemployment rate was still 10%. We would instead have a much worse problem. So shut up if you're whining about the cost of gasoline and food and electricity and heating your home and clothing and everything. Shut up about these are high-class problems. These, when you pump your gas at an inflated price, make sure you put that pinky right out there, okay? Put that pinky up in the air as high as you possibly can, because this is a high-class joint. Now, Ron Klain retweeted that with his own commentary. He just said this and had two emojis of fingers pointing down at Jason Furman's commentary that we've got high-class problems. That's what you want. Hey, you bad news, you've got cancer. Good news is you've got high-class cancer. So, you know, of all the cancers you could have, the high-class one is the one you want the most. So congratulations. It's rectal cancer. It's high-class. It's where these people seem to have their heads. And I think that might be a correlation isn't necessarily causation, but sometimes it is. Can you imagine the chief of staff, the president of the United States going, yeah, no, these are high-class problems, man. That's what it is. So Joe Biden yesterday comes out with what he's proposed, or what his handlers, what people like Ron Klain, who are thinking that we have high-class solutions. Got to have a high-class solution to a high-class problem. Am I right? I'm right. We're going to have to tax caviar and champagne. That'll get us out of this malaise. Joe Biden says his solution is to keep the ports in Los Angeles and one other place in California open 24 hours a day. That should solve the problem. It's incredibly stupid and wildly off the mark. I'll explain why in a second. But first, listen to Joe Biden tout this as though, well, this is probably the most significant thing we could possibly do.
The Port of Los Angeles announced today that it's going to begin operating 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. This follows the Port of Long Beach's commitment to 24/7 that it announced just weeks ago. 24/7 system, what most of the leading countries in the world already operate on now, except us, until now. This is the first key step toward moving our entire freight, transportation, and logistical supply chain nationwide to a 24/7 system.
That's great. 24/7. It's called market forces. They should have been doing this already. Why weren't they? I suspect is a lot of regulation from the state and federal governments. And also, I would guess, union resistance. But that's beside the point. What this does to address the supply chain issue and the ships out in the ocean off the coast of California, what that does to address those is absolutely nothing. It does absolutely nothing. Now, why? How? How can that be? You just said they're going to go from 40-hour work week to 24/7, 60 hours more. They got to be. No, the problem isn't that they can't unload these ships. They can unload these ships. Most of that is automatic, or it would take one or two guys with those giant crane things to get them out of there. And then they put them on the trucks down in the ports, which are robotic driven. The problem is getting those containers off the docks, you see. Getting them off the docks requires human beings, more human beings. It requires truck drivers. And that's where the snag is. That's where the kink in the supply chain occurs. There aren't enough truck drivers. Now, in California, this is a particularly bad question or bad issue because of California law. California has an incredibly, well, to say they have an incredibly stupid law is a bit of an understatement. They have scores of incredibly stupid laws, but they have one particularly stupid law that requires, and this is something Democrats have tried to impose nationwide, which you can just imagine how bad it would be, that it requires anybody who works a certain number of hours as an independent contractor, say an Uber driver. Uber drivers have to be, in California, have to be considered employees of Uber, which goes against the entire concept of Uber, by the way, and Lyft and all that. I'm not singling out Uber. But it goes against the entire concept of what those companies are. Uber isn't a driving company. We'll dispatch a driver to you. They are the app. They are the connection point between somebody who wants to go somewhere and somebody who wants to take somebody somewhere. That's Uber in the middle. They are a tech company. But because so many people were making money with Uber and it was upsetting taxi drivers largely, and they're powerful, their unions are powerful. New York, the taxi drivers hate Uber. They would love to see something like this in New York. But because moneyed interests that fund the Democrat Party are upset by Uber's existence, by competition, by them maybe having to clean their cabs every once in a while. Because if you've been in a cab in the last few years, not exactly. Some of these things you're like, is this car going to stay together long enough to get me to where we're going? When you have that as your competition, you don't like somebody coming in going, you can ride in a nice town car for about the same amount of money? Hell, I'm going to do that. So you want to ruin them. The way to ruin them is you can't just say, we outlaw these, we ban these things, because people wouldn't stand for that. You say, for their own good, we've got to make sure that these people who are driving, that they're actually employees of Uber, that it means that they get health insurance, they get paid vacation, they get this, that, and the other thing. And you're sitting there, you're going, now, all the benefits of Uber, now you're adding to Uber's costs. Uber that connects this company, now they have to become a human resources company too. And they have to employ all these people? Well, no. There's a lot of freelance writers out in California who'd write, you know, 30 posts a year, make a decent living for various bunch of different websites. And this law, SB 40, I think, might have been SB 8. But they then came out and said, now you've got to treat these people like employees. And these websites, these liberal websites who never met a left-wing cause they didn't love, are going, we have to let you go as an as a contractor because we can't afford to pay for your health insurance. So people have gone out of business. People not out of business. People have lost their jobs because of this piece of legislation. Truck drivers are a lot of times independent contractors. This law causes people in California to then go, now you have to be an employee. Now you have to be an employee. Health benefits and everything. Well, then the company says, all right, well, if that's how it's got to be, we're going to lose 25% of our drivers because we got to cover the cost of that and we can't just eat it. So the government is creating this problem. It's not a matter. You can get the stuff off the ships. It's getting the stuff off the docks that's the problem. That's the problem. That's the problem governments have exacerbated. So Joe Biden's 24/7. That's all well and good. You just wait for one of these stacks, because I'm sure they're going to have to stack things even higher. Wait for one of these stacks to collapse. That will be the fault of this order. This will be the fault of this president. It'll never be framed that way, but I'm throwing it down. If they stack them too high, they're going to safety, 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 and they go, we got to push it, we got to push it, we got to get rid of these ships. Somebody's going to get killed. I guarantee it. So in addition to Joe Biden, we're going to keep the ports open 24/7. We got that thing. Like, that is just dumb. The problem is the trucks. We don't have the trucks to get them out of there. But they'll figure that out sooner or later. Sooner or later, maybe. Joe Biden continues after saying that they're going to be open 24/7. Said with more hours, they can move more stuff. Again, doesn't really work out that way, Joe. I understand you've never held a real job in your life, but somebody in your administration should have, or all these so-called experts you're talking to. More hours to get stuff off the ships ain't going to help.
And here's why it matters. Traditionally, our ports have only been open during the week, Monday through Friday, and they're generally closed down at nights and on weekends. By staying open 7 days a week through the night and on the weekends, the port of Los Angeles will open over 60 extra hours a week will be open. In total, that will almost double the number of hours that the port is open for business from earlier this year. That means an increase in the hours for workers to be moving cargo off ships onto trucks and rail cars to get to their destination.
Of course, if there are no trucks there, or you've run out of rail cars, what do you do? You know, there are only so many truck drivers. California has made things way worse for the number of truck drivers. And we're supposed to go, well, Joe Biden's on this. Don't worry about it. But of course, he's hyping this because it's just a game of kick the can. It's not a game of solve the problem. It's a game of kick the can. His poll numbers are in the toilet and he's trying to boost them up so that he can then put pressure on his fellow Democrats to pass his massive infrastructure bill, which, by the way, has nothing to do with infrastructure and would not address this problem in any way, shape, or form, at least not what the real problem is. Like, oh, well, now you've got childcare. That's great. We still can't buy diapers. So what are you going to do? So he continues about how this is hyping. This is a game changer, game changer.
And more than that, the night hours are critical for increasing the movement of goods because highways are less crowded in the evening, at night. In fact, during off-peak hours in Los Angeles, cargo leaves the port at a 25% faster pace than during the day shift. So by increasing the number of late-night hours of operation and opening up for less crowded hours when the goods can move faster, today's announcement has the potential to be a game-changer.
Oh, it's a potential to be a game-changer. Well, what do you do with, okay, you're getting food off, say, to go to a grocery store. There you go. And some electronics off to go to Best Buy so you can get a dishwasher inside of 6 months. And you go, and all right, now it's 10 o'clock at night, and you should be at Best Buy by, I don't know, 1 a.m. Well, Best Buy closed at 9. Best Buy going to have to keep the staff there and say, all right, well, we got to, at least the warehouse crew has got to sit here till 3 o'clock in the morning so we can unload this truck. It's the number of trucks that are the problem, more so than whether or not they hit traffic. Oh, in Los Angeles. Yeah. Okay. Everybody knows the traffic in LA sucks. So what? We managed to survive as a country with the traffic in Los Angeles sucking and, you know, without running out of toilet paper, without running out of donuts, without running out of baby issues, everything, without paying through the nose for steaks, without paying, this is not going to fix the problem. This isn't even going to address the problem. Because again, won't fix it because there's not enough truck drivers. That's the problem. That's keeping more hours. Oh, they can drive faster. Here's a, if you drive, I don't know what the number is. I think it's something like 400 miles a day. If you can drive only 400 miles a day, having less or fewer cars on the road might enable you to do it faster, might, provided you run into traffic. If you don't run into traffic, yeah, okay, you can get your 400 miles faster. But Los Angeles is not 400 miles long. It's the fact that you can only drive 400 miles that's the problem. You can only drive 8 hours, 10 hours, whatever it is, that is the problem. The time of day doesn't, well, you can only drive 400 miles. Okay, but now you do it from midnight to 8 a.m. when there are fewer cars on the road. Okay, that still is only 400 miles. Doesn't matter when you do it. It doesn't matter when you do it. You're still limited, and the limit is the problem. Joe? Is there nobody in your administration with any common sense? Does nothing, none of the hamsters running in the wheel in your brain, none of them firing and even one cylinder to go, well, wait a second, this doesn't sound like it's doing anything really. Got to go out there and spin it like it's the solution we've all been waiting for, but ultimately it'll make no bit of difference at all whatsoever. 400 miles is 400 miles, whether it takes you from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. to drive it or from midnight to 3 a.m. Government says you're done. And by the way, if you manage to get your 400 miles or your mile limit or whatever done in less time, you're not allowed to then go do more because you've got still energy reserves. More than likely, the government will go, well, you must be speeding. We're going to have to fine you for speeding because that's how government works. Government, in words to paraphrase Ronald Reagan, is not the solution. Government, more often than not, is the problem. And of course, this government acts as though there is no problem. Ginger Goebbels, for example, okay, she said yesterday that gas prices are up in some places, but not in all places. Gas prices are not up in all. Where? Where is this mythical bubble in the United States of America, in the continental United States of America, where gas prices are still where they were last year? So I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll not only drive my car there to fill it up, I'll get a couple of tanker trucks and fill those up and then drive them to where, you know, the rest of us live, and I'll make a profit. Gas is up by like a dollar on average across the country. So we'll sell our ill-gotten gains from that magical bubble place where gas hasn't been inflated. We'll sell it at 50 cents more than we pay for it. The gas station owners will be able to make a healthy profit, and we'll make a massive profit. Listen to Ginger Goebbels yesterday. But gas is up in some places, but not all places.
For a range of issues, and we should talk about those, that the American people are, of course, impacted by rising prices of gas in some parts of the country, not all.
Not all. Where are these places? Where can I go? Is there like an Amazon for gas where I can get gas delivered? You get that Iowa gas. Boy, howdy, that Iowa gas is like they're giving it away. It's like 50 cents a gallon. But don't tell anybody, okay? I got a gas guy. He's coming around. He's going to give me some of that cheap gas. Where do these people live? I get it. She probably doesn't drive very far. She more than likely lives right in Northern Virginia across the river from the White House and comes in and she's making a pretty good salary. And I'm sure there's a lot of expenses that are done and what have you. It's not a problem. She might even take Uber. They might even send a government car for her to come in. Most people don't have that luxury. Speaking of somebody who does have that luxury, Secretary Mayor Pete, our Secretary of Transportation. You want to talk, they always talk about, oh, well, Tim Scott, he's just a token. He's just a token black guy. He's not. He won the election. It's offensive to say. It's racist to say. If you'd said that about a Democrat, the mob would be outside your house with pitchforks inside of 20 minutes, demanding your scalp. And worse. But Pete Buttigieg, as Secretary of Transportation, he literally has no experience in this. He was, for a very short period of time, mayor of South Bend, Indiana. Mayor of South Bend, Indiana, where one of the major projects he undertook was a bike path project that he screwed up, cost a lot more than it otherwise should have, and was paid for largely with federal money. He's a disaster as mayor of South Bend, Indiana. But he's gay. He's gay. He's got a husband, Chasten. And I want to know who the hell names their kid Chasten. Like, how disappointed were you that it wasn't a girl? You go, well, name it Chasten. Or that you didn't want a kid at all. Name it Chasten. See if I care. I don't care. Forget it. But Chasten and Pete, Secretary Mayor Pete, sorry, I have to use his official title. Chasten and Secretary Mayor Pete recently adopted, I think, twins. At least one kid. I'm not writing a biography of the guy, so I haven't followed it all that closely. I just do know that there was a picture, weirdly, of those two in a hospital bed holding babies. like what you didn't, unless, you know, I missed something. Breaking news, man gives birth. Unless I missed something, I don't believe that you gave birth to that. Oh, by the way, you can't. There's a, what is this? Healthline. Healthline.com. A lot of people find, if you're searching stuff for your health, you find this website. They have a post up, can men get pregnant? Is it possible? Yes, it's possible for men to become pregnant and give birth to children of their own. In fact, it's probably a lot more common than you might think. In order to explain, we'll need to break down some common misconceptions about how we understand the term man. No, we understand the term man. It's you idiots on the left who don't say. Not all people who are assigned male at birth identify as men. Those who do are cisgender men. Conversely, some people who are assigned female at birth identify as men. These folks may be transgender men or transmasculine people or mentally delusional. Your choice. Call it what you want. No, men can't give birth. So I'm pretty sure that why they're in a hospital bed, Chasten and Mayor Secretary Pete, is a mystery and will remain a mystery. But Secretary Mayor Pete has been busy with this kid. I think he's on maternity leave. Still, he gave an interview yesterday, I think, to CNBC, or no, it was CNN, talking about supply chain. And this is how he chose to make a joke about it. Now, if Donald Trump had made a joke about it, if a Republican had made a joke about this, if they were in charge, all hell would break loose. Mayor Pete, nothing, no hell breaks loose. And it's a bad joke. That's my biggest problem with it, is it's a really stupid joke. But it shows that he's not taking this particularly seriously, and he might not be the man for the job.
So holiday expectations management, as we're looking at these supply chain issues, how bad are they going to get for Americans? And I'm talking specifically, you know, leading here into the December holidays, where people are relying on getting goods, on getting presents.
Well, I think there's always been two kinds of Christmas shoppers. There's the ones who have all their list completed by Halloween, and then there's people like me who show up at the mall on Christmas Eve. If you're in that latter bucket, obviously there's going to be more challenges.
Yeah, you know, if you just put off, if you're, you know, Black Friday shoppers will be fine, but if you're a last-minute procrastinator like me, you're going to have problems. That's all funny. It's very funny, Pete. What do you say when it's medicine? What do you say when it's prescription medicine used to keep people alive and it's sitting out there off the coast of Los Angeles for a couple of months? Baking. I don't know if it's climate controlled or not. Probably not completely climate controlled. And maybe you don't want that stuff sitting there for that long, even if it is climate controlled. Just throwing it out there. We were told, if you remember, during the beginning of the pandemic, what was the thing that politicians of both parties promised us? We need to bring back the supply chain to the United States when it comes to pharmaceuticals. Maybe we should bring back a whole lot of the supply chain, but particularly pharmaceuticals. Start with pharmaceuticals, and then we go with everything else after that. But guess what? Nothing has been done on the pharmaceutical front. You heard about a pharmaceutical manufacturing plant opening up in the United States of America? No, you haven't. Have you heard about the ingredients to pharmaceuticals? A plant making the ingredients? No, you haven't. People aren't paying attention. So why care about it? It's not an issue that comes up in polling. Why care about it? Instead, you get idiots like this. This is a California congresswoman, federal, named Michelle Steele. She has her Twitter bio as Korean-American wife, mother, and tax fighter, serving California's 48th district in Congress. Blah, blah, blah. She's a Republican. Her solution to what's going on out there? News. Today, I introduced legislation to ban cargo ships off the Orange County coast. Ships anchored for weeks and months off our coast likely caused this week's oil spill. Reports show that the pipe may have been struck several other times by ships' anchors off the coast. She's got a bill that says, well, we're going to make sure that they can't part. What are you going to do? They're going to float? Again, these ships have to be anchored. These ships are more important as to whether than surf's up. You know, whether or not you can get beach revenue. This is the whole country dependent upon what comes through the port of Los Angeles. Maybe instead of passing dumb feel-good laws so you can go around and say, I've championed keeping the water clean off the coast, you should try to deal with the reason that ships are stuck out there, huh? Maybe pressure your own state government to get rid of that ridiculous law that makes contractors employees, that raises the cost of doing business in California. For places like Uber and truck drivers and things like, maybe get rid of that. instead of saying, well, you can't, you're just going to have to not be able to sit there anymore. All that's going to do is cause them to sit out further or go to other ports or worse, go to other countries and say to hell with it. And then you get fewer ships coming to the United States and you're really not meeting our needs. Oh, I'm sure it plays well amongst a certain hippie contingency out there in California. But it is not good for the American people if anybody in Washington gives a damn about what is good for the American people, which you have to sit there and shake your head and go, do they? Because sometimes it doesn't feel like they do. In the last few minutes we have left, I want to give you an update on Down Under in Australia. This is the voice of Michael Gunner. He's the Northwest Territories Chief Minister. I don't know what the hell that means. I don't know how the Australian government works, whether he's the president or the governor or whatever. It's a huge area, Northwest Territory. Talking about vaccine requirements and mandates and a pretty massive fine you're going to face. Listen to the people who have to get the shot. It's a broad category.
Ask yourself these three questions. In my work, do I come into contact with vulnerable people? Is my workplace at a higher risk of infection? Do I work on infrastructure or logistics that are critical to the territory? If your answer is maybe, or I don't know, you need to get the jab. Critically, the direction also applies to industries who directly face customers in circumstances where the worker may not know the vulnerability of the person they are interacting with. So it is simple. If your job includes interacting with members of the public, then you need to get the jab. If you work in hospitality, you need to get the jab. If you work in retail or in a supermarket, you need to get the jab. If you are behind the counter at the bank, if you're a receptionist or positions like that, you need to get the jab. If you are a barber, a hairdresser, a beauty therapist, you need to get the jab. All these workers and many, many more directly interact with members of the public. That means you are frontline workers in our economy. That means you must be vaccinated.
If you interact with anybody, you've got to get the shot because you don't know who in the general public is vulnerable. Maybe if you are vulnerable, if you have existing comorbidities, maybe you're the one who should, I don't know, take precautions rather than everybody else has to do what the government says because you exist. Wear a sign, wear a pin, act differently. Act more carefully. But instead, they put it on everybody down there. Now, what do you think? Hairdressers, everything. You got to get the jab. Okay, well, what are the consequences if you don't? It's not only do you lose your job, good luck paying your bills, but then the government's going to come back around. They're going to take your job, and they're going to beat you over the head and take your wallet, too.
Of course, there can be exemptions, but these are extremely narrow and must be backed up with medical evidence. Simply not wanting the vaccine is not a reason. Today, we're also announcing the date from which this mandate comes into effect. From Saturday, the 13th of November, if you have not received at least your first dose of a vaccine, you will not be permitted to attend your workplace in that role, and a failure to comply with the direction is a $5,000 fine. That means that workers must have received at least their first dose by Friday, the 12th of November, at the latest. You have 30 days.
Get this shot, lose your job, or get a $5,000 fine. You think they're going to stop there? Anybody with the audacity to go that far is willing to go even farther. That's how these people work. That's why you don't get, they're like piranha when you throw some raw hamburger into the aquarium or something, or once your tank full of Oscars and you throw some goldfish in there. They're ready. They'll eat as many as you got. Throw them in there. They'll go crazy once the frenzy starts, which is why you never give these people any power whatsoever. Never, ever. And if they get their hands on it, you take it away as quickly as you possibly can, like a kid that got their hands on a knife. That's what we're ruled by, a kid who got their hands on a knife. But it's an infant who got its hands on a knife. By this time, it's been played to death, the vivisection of Dr. Sanjay Gupta. My God, they just destroyed, Joe Rogan destroyed him. And then he ran back to CNN and, of course, tolerated the lies again because that's what people on CNN do. I'm sure you've seen it 1,000 times by now. You don't need to hear my take on it anymore. There really isn't a unique take on it. This is what CNN is. This is what CNN has become. To hell with them. They're fun to mock. That's really the only purpose they serve. So as you go into this weekend, be thankful for what you have and be thankful for what you don't have. And what you don't have is whatever it is that Brian Stelter has. Be thankful you're not Brian Stelter, for the love of God. If you need a reason to drop to your knees and thank the Lord above for all creation and all the kindness, do it to thank him for not making you Brian Stelter. So there's that. Anyway, have a great weekend. Don't forget, patreon.com/Derek Hunter Podcast, all one word, the Weekend Effin' Review. You can get it there. It'll be live tonight at 12:01 a.m. And good Lord, do we already have, I don't know, 12 hours worth of programming that could be sworn about that needs to just be sitting there listening to these idiots. I don't know. Anyway, get well, Bill Clinton. I hope you don't, didn't like you as president, but actually the last two Democrats, they make me a little nostalgic for you, to be honest with you. Otherwise, if you're not going to listen to the Patreon program, if you're not going to go and subscribe there, which you should, don't forget to enter, by the way, if you're already a subscriber, to win the signed copy of the book. I got to decide which book to give away next week. I'll announce that on Monday's program along with the winner. Have an awesome weekend. We've all deserved it. I'll see you later.
I'm joined by the executive director of the ports of Los Angeles and Long Beach, Gene Sirocca, and Mario Cordono. I apologize, Mario.